Hello, and welcome to a special edition of NDTnow.com's podcast. I'm your host, Mary Beth Michelli. Today, we are combining two of our regular shows, GAIN, our podcast exploring topics in NDT business, and our signature show, We've Got Your Six, where we interview prominent figures in the NDT industry, asking them the same six questions, which tend to cover how they got into NDT, where they think the NDT industry is headed, and some advice for those just starting in their careers. You may be wondering, why are we combining these two shows today? Because our guest today is not only a legend in the NDT community, but as expected, she has a lot going on. So one show was not enough to cover everything. Plus, there's no more perfect guest to have on during Women's History Month than Ms. Karen Smith. Karen is the president of Olympus Scientific Solutions Americas, where she has been since their acquisition of RD Tech back in 2005, of which she was the general manager. Prior to RD Tech, Ms. Smith worked for GE and Panametrics. Karen has her MBA and holds a degree in electrical engineering. I'm extremely thrilled to have Karen Smith here with us today. Welcome, Karen.
Hi, Mary Beth. It's so great to be here, and it's a great honor to have this opportunity to chat with you today.
That's great. And looking at your bio, I realized that your bio throughout NDT really shows the history of the whole industry on the ultrasonic side. So I'm excited to talk with you today a little bit about sort of what you're doing now and where you came from and how you even got into this industry. So we'll start with our We've Got Your Six format for the first part of this podcast. And it always starts by asking our guests, can you tell us a little bit about what you do now, what you do today?
Yes, absolutely. So today, as you mentioned, I'm the president of Olympus Scientific Solutions Americas. And basically, we are a few facilities in the United States and Canada that focus on R&D, manufacturing, and global distribution of a host of products that are using the technologies of ultrasound, of course, phased array ultrasound, conventional ultrasound, eddy current, conventional eddy current array products, and X-ray fluorescence and all the sensors that go along with everything. And we are the design, manufacturer, and distribution location for the world for the Olympus products of those technologies. So I'm the president of that organization. It's a tremendous blast and it's an amazing team that I get to work with.
Excellent. Yes. Sounds like you have a lot going on.
We do have a lot going on, but it's a lot of product lines, actually. That's, I think, the part that maybe people don't know as well. It's one of these businesses. I think if you spend a long time in the NDT industry, you know it, but it's a huge number of part numbers just to be able to have the right number of solutions for our customers. Yet each particular part number isn't massive in volume. So it's a kind of business that's very interesting and complicated to work in, because we're always balancing this need for yet another version of the technology. And yet each one of those products in itself, you know, it's not like we're selling millions of anything. We're selling, you know, at most thousands of an item. But we have maybe 50,000 items in our item list, you know. So it's a complicated business because of that. But it's obviously a lot of fun because I've been doing it a long time.
Well, plus I know that you guys get involved with a lot of R&D and especially on the development side. So there's always some innovation going on at Olympus as well.
Yes, our annual investment in innovation and R&D is quite significant. And we have a large staff of engineers that sit in three different locations in Quebec City, Canada, in near the Boston area in Waltham, Massachusetts. And we have more engineers in State College, Pennsylvania, where we make a lot of our probes. So it's a very diverse engineering team, and we do invest heavily every single year in this development of, you know, either sustaining the existing technology, because, you know, you have to do that. Well, nowadays you have to do it even more because of all the supply chain issues around the world. So you're constantly having to maybe redesign just to be able to continue to deliver what you're already delivering. But in addition to that, we're constantly trying to, you know, innovate new technologies, new solutions, new ways of using the technology that we know, so that we can bring more value to the inspection.
For sure. Yeah. And I know the NDT industry has been innovating a lot in general. So just even keeping up with and staying ahead of the curve on that is probably a big challenge. But maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. So I always like to ask our guests, how did you end up in NDT? Because whereas I found out about NDT before I started college and decided that's exactly what I wanted to do, I think I'm maybe one of like five people in the universe who came into the NDT industry that way.
It's kind of fascinating, Mary Beth, because we almost have that in common, but not quite. It was indeed my first job out of college. I didn't know what it was at that time. You knew before you started, but by total luck, I found myself in a job in NDT. Because I was just looking for a job. It was 1987. It wasn't the greatest year I remember to find a job. And I graduated with an electrical engineering degree, which I realized at that time I did not want to go straight into engineering work. So I was looking around for what I could do. And a friend of my mother's actually was working for a headhunting company. And she said, you know, we have this technical sales opportunity. Maybe you'd like that. And I thought maybe it was a good fit with my personality. And so the other position I was choosing between was that job or to be a nuclear engineer at Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. Mm. And I said, you know what? And I just felt like the one in Portsmouth Naval Shipyard maybe wasn't a fit for who I was. And this technical sales opportunity just seemed like a better fit. So I tried it on. And I have never left the industry ever since. In fact, you mentioned all the different companies I've worked for, but it's actually the same company for that entire time since the day I left college. And I've always loved what we do, and I love the market, and I've always loved working with our customers. It's just been fun ever since that day.
That's awesome. And I find that to be the case with a lot of people in NDT. Once they get into it, they have a hard time escaping because what we do is so rewarding that people just love the industry. They love the people, they love the mission. And it's just not something that you want to leave.
Literally, Mary Beth, got goosebumps as soon as you said, love the mission, love what we do. Still just the second gave me goosebumps even 35 years later or whatever it is. It's just unbelievable because you're so right. That is what's so enjoyable. People that meet me like strangers and I start talking about what we do and the mission that we're on in this community that we have in NDT. And they're just like, you really love it. Yes, I really do. And it's amazing that at this point you can still, because it's so diverse and it never stops changing. And that's why it's fascinating. You know, the technology, the physics doesn't change, right? But the needs change constantly, which constantly puts pressure on a company like ours to keep meeting those changing needs. The materials have changed so much. The things we use them for, the risks that we're trying to help people manage are constantly changing. And that's what makes it so interesting because it's never the same. Like every 30 minutes we're faced with something else. It's unbelievably true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's one of the things that keeps it pretty exciting. Right. So, so can you tell us a little bit about, you already started mentioning it, but what technologies you've used most throughout your career?
Yeah. I'd have to say that even though right now our business is involved in ultrasound and eddy current and, video scopes, and of course, microscopy, it's true that I personally have spent the majority of my career. I started out in ultrasound, and I spent most of my career in ultrasound. And even today, the business that I'm responsible for is both ultrasound and eddy current. But for the majority of my time, I was mostly focused on ultrasound. Of course, all the different facets of ultrasound, whether it be the probe side, whether it be thickness gauging or flaw detection or, you know, conventional or phased array, but mostly ultrasound. And more recently in the last, I'd say last 10 years or more, also on the eddy current side.
Excellent. So we know that this NDD community is really, I would say, different than a lot of industries out there. You know, there's a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of coming together and helping each other. And so mentoring really has a very important, prominent role in the NDT industry. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about who your mentors were and how their mentorship affected you.
Sure. I've been so lucky to have a few, and they've all played slightly different roles. So I'll try to be brief about it. But first and foremost, I have to say the people that hired me at Panametrics, they were some of the founders of some of the most interesting transducer technology that we still use today as some of the best in class that are not even comparable still to other things. So these were scientists, you know, that I first got involved in, but they were people who weren't just scientists who just were interested in creating. They were actually just interested in educating. And so I got this luxury of being sort of, I don't know, not very, when you go to engineering school, you don't learn about NDT. You don't learn about ultrasound. You don't even learn about ultrasound, let alone NDT. You learn about physics and that's about it. The people that I had, those first two bosses that I had, one of them was Ken Fowler. Another one was Bob Melpignano. I had another boss, Dan Carnevale, who's well known in the industry and in a different business right now. And then there was this engineering leader that probably no one's ever heard of, Kent Fox. And I used to spend I used to sit down in these guys' offices sometimes, and I just used to ask question after question because they loved to teach. But those early teachers from the technology perspective were also pretty fascinating business people, especially Ken Fowler, who was the vice president of our division at Panametrics at the time. And I'll just never forget, you know, some guidance he gave me. And because we were a small company, and, you know, I would get this new job and he would just say to me, the job is what you make it to be. And I use this phrase over and over again, because believe it or not, when I look back, it was that freedom that somebody gave me to say that job could be what I thought it should be. And because it was kind of a road less traveled, you know, we were just still just kind of infants in this business. And someone gave me the freedom to do what I thought was right. And even though I was young and inexperienced and, you know, over their watchful eyes or whatever, you know, under their watchful care, it just stayed with me forever. And you know, so that's one thing I just wanted to mention. But these people were educators, and I'm very grateful because I had that strong technical education. However, later on, the incredible mentorship that I got from a few people that are also still very well known in this industry, and I'll just name them because it's unbelievable. Jim Treat was one of the people who absolutely gave me some of the confidence I needed to help to become a partner. He was one of my strong customer partnerships at the time, one of the strongest, but he taught me what it meant to have that bi-directional relationship with customers at the partnership level, and to really embrace the fact that it could be such a win-win relationship, and that we could appreciate each other's problems at such a detailed level. And he taught me that it was the right thing to do to get to that level of relationship with a client that I could never have learned on my own. And so I'm incredibly indebted to the kind of relationship building that he taught me. And then, of course, I was educated by the Hellyer Group, as you know, my level one and level two in ultrasound with the Hellyer team. So Chuck Hellyer was yet another person who, you know, I got to spend a lot of time with, because he wasn't very far and he would travel a lot to our location. And his leadership and his style, which is, you know, just incredibly professional, just the level of professionalism. And I have to add to that group, and one last person who is very similar is Bruce Pellegrino. and another, you know, iconic member of this NDT community. But these people, and that's the end of my list, even though it's a little bit long. But I have to say, without those people helping me at, you know, in slightly different ways throughout my career, I just feel like it would not have been as well-rounded and as grounded, not just well-rounded, but extremely grounded by people who believed so much in what they were doing, yet believed in the how they did it, in the professionalism that they showed me. It's just remarkable. I feel so grateful to have had those people around me when I was so young.
Yeah, that's amazing. And of course, some of those have been my mentors as well, and they're still in the industry and still giving. And I would say what's really remarkable about at least the ones that I know is that I think, you know, at the beginning of my career and at the beginning of your career, it was easier for women to be ignored or pushed aside, or, you know, wait for us to have to prove ourselves. And those mentors that you spoke about were never like that. They were never.
Never, ever, ever. I never once felt like I was different than anyone else they interacted with. With every single one of them, I never felt that way. It's amazing. You're so right, Mary Beth. I never really thought of that until you just said that. But you are 100% right. Never, never. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, you know, when as women who came up through this industry is so heavily male dominated, that finding those mentors that did treat you like everybody else, that it had, you know, you were not discounted, you were part of the team, and they were going to educate you just like they educated everybody else. It was priceless.
Absolutely priceless. And I am forever grateful because I got to start my career feeling like, right or wrong, I really felt like I was on an even playing field, like everybody else, because of people like them. Because of people like them, they absolutely never did it have to enter my mind whether or not I was a woman that was going to be difficult. People used to ask me that all the time. Is it difficult? I'm like, no, it's not. Well, I shouldn't say that. Okay, that's not the right thing. It was difficult at other times, but not with people like that. I can't say it wasn't ever difficult. That would not be fair at all. But it wasn't around these key people who taught me sort of to believe in something bigger than those difficult days. There was always difficult days, always. But those people helped me realize that that's not the way it had to be. And so fighting for getting past those difficult days was a lot easier when you had people like that that helped to show you another way. I knew there was another way because there was people in my life that showed me that there was another way. So I believed in it. I believed in it, and I still believe in it now. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's fascinating and how lucky we could have been at that time in the 80s. In fact, it was absolutely incredible. But yeah, I totally agree with you.
So I guess along those lines, what advice would you give someone starting out in this business? And maybe in particular, what advice do you give the women out there starting in this business?
Yeah, certainly. I am absolutely continue to be flabbergasted that there's not more women in this business. I think the business is so attractive that I talk to people that have no idea what we do. And I'm like, I cannot believe that there are not more women doing what we do. There's no reason why women should not feel like this is a business that is very, very interesting and very, very, I'd say it gives back in so many ways. And it's a very fulfilling type of business to go into. So the first thing is that, you know, okay, women, you should give it a chance. You should give it a try because there's something really magical here. That is interesting, not just for gentlemen, but for women also. The second thing, you know, that I would give advice to anyone, women or men, is, you know, it's almost any career advice. It's not specifically to our business. But when I look back and I say, okay, what worked well and what didn't work well? What worked well was just keeping an open mind and trying something new, trying the next thing that was next opportunity that came, you know. some people call it luck that we've had, you know, you yourself or me, you know, we've had all these opportunities, right, to do all these different things. I used to think it was lucky. I now know it wasn't so lucky. I now know that it all just was like passing me by like a movie in front of me. And what I had to do actually was just kind of reach out and grab and say, okay, yes, I want to try that. Yes, I want to try that. Okay, I'll do that. And some things were very scary to try, in fact. You know, it was very scary when I would go into a plant and there was an 800 degree wall in front of me. And they would say, let's give this a try. Karen, you do it. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and, but you don't have to do everything, of course, but you have to gravitate towards some opportunities that sort of give you that education, first of all, but give you the experience you can try things on and you know what you like and you know what you don't like. And I'll give you a practical business example is that, you know, there was a time when I took on manufacturing for the first time in our organization after being in sales and marketing most of my career. And I remember my husband saying, really? You're going to be interested? I'm like, well, this is what we need to do. I need to help. Right. And he was right. Actually, it wasn't the most fun I ever had. So eventually I didn't run manufacturing forever. And eventually, but it was great experience just to try it, just to know what it was to learn about it, to understand what the issues were. And that helps me do my job today. The fact that I was kind of willing to just try things for a while and then gravitate towards the stuff that was really motivating for me at the end. So that's my advice is to you got to try different things. This business has so much opportunity. There's so many different technologies you can try. And there's so many different elements of the business. You know, there's the part that we do, which is designing product and delivering product around the world. But then there's the actual hands-on part that I have actually not done as much, except you know, just some field trials in the past. But basically, there's just so many different ways you can work in this business that I think people should just try things and see what works for them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things with women in particular, they statistically show that women don't go after jobs that they don't feel 100% qualified for. Or opportunities. And so I think it's great advice to talk about, you know, hey, we're going to try it out. Maybe it's not for me, but let's try it. And try to develop the skills that work in that part of the business. And maybe you don't like it and maybe it's going to be, but probably it'll be useful for you later.
Exactly. And I do think that this part about feeling ready, that's something you have to also try. You have to prove to yourself, because I don't think I've ever been 100% ready for anything. And to this day, I'm not 100% ready for sort of my next adventure ever. I never feel really ready. But I think I went out on a limb at some point in my life and said, I don't feel ready, but I'm going to do it anyway. And then you realize it wasn't the disaster that I thought it was going to be. So not being fully ready, but surrounding yourself with people who can guide, support, and coach while you're doing something you're not quite ready for, that completely works. And so when you don't feel ready for something, just say, okay, who am I going to call when I need advice? And you kind of, oh, I know how I would get advice. I'd call Mary Beth, or I'd call, you know, someone else, and I'd get help when I needed it. So I think that's the first thing you have to do, is you have to just try that and prove to yourself that even though you're not completely ready for something, it's okay anyway. But you got to take that first leap of faith at some point.
For sure. For sure. And I certainly did that recently with NDTMA. I don't think I felt like I was ready to take over for George after 28 years in the middle of a pandemic. But I had a lot of great people around me, and I asked for advice, and there's always lessons learned, and you go from there. You know, I think it's the further you get in your career, the further you realize that people are not, no one's perfect, and nothing's going to go 100%, 100% of the time. So you just have to throw yourself into it and work hard, do your best, use your skills, but know that you do have those mentors and those colleagues to help you out.
Yes, I remember reading about your decision on social media, and I was like, oh, Mary Beth. And I had a feeling it had to be at least a little bit scary to say yes to that adventure. But I was just so happy to see you doing it. I'm so thrilled. So thank you so much for putting yourself into that role. That's fantastic. And I was so excited when I read that.
Yeah. And it's been a lot of fun and I'm learning new skills. So there we go. So we always like to end this portion of our show with asking our guests, where do you see the industry in the next 10 years? And I know there's been a lot of changes, even in the last 10 years. And I feel like things are changing more rapidly, at a faster pace. So I'd love to hear what you think, where you see the industry going in the next 10 years.
Sure. I think that we have seen a lot of changes in terms of the use of some, you know, new tools, sometimes very mechanical things, in fact, to apply the same technologies that we all know work extremely well, but to be able to, you know, reach new places or to monitor more completely, or, you know, without downtime and at 100% of the time and at higher temperatures and all kinds of things like that. So we've seen a lot of changes in sort of the mechanical aspect of inspection recently in the last several years. And I think that will continue. I don't think we've seen the end of that. I think over the next 10 years, we're going to see even better inventions on how to just get us to places we need to be more routinely to embed things into places physically. You know, there's that physical attribute, which is if we could just get there and if we could just get something embedded there and in some type of sensor at the right place that we can monitor continuously, we're all going to be better off. And so I think even though we've started that journey, we are not near the end of that journey. I think it's going to take us 10 more years to really see the fruit of what is being developed right now in some of those sensing areas. Again, it applies some of the same data acquisition capabilities that we have today, but it allows us to do things better mechanically than we've ever done them before, which is fantastic. But I do think the part that we've really just, you know, we haven't scratched the surface enough yet on, and so I think that the next 10 years will go extremely fast with the analytics using artificial intelligence to just help us see more better information coming out of the data that even we get today. We have so much data today that we underutilize because we aren't able to analyze it as efficiently as we would like to. So there's almost more data than we know what to do with. It's like the recycling problem. We have more stuff than we know how to process it and get it back out into the world in a meaningful way. I feel like from a big data perspective, that's almost where we start to reach. We have a lot of data and we have to find better, faster, more efficient ways of processing the data so that the experts in our field can give the best possible advice and continue to do, you know, better predictions on the data that we can collect. So I think I know it sounds a little cliche, but I really believe that the artificial intelligence side is just scratching the surface, and it's what we're going to see helping the future of this business.
For sure. I totally agree. I work on structural health monitoring and that's the big problem, right? We've got piles and piles and piles of data. And the big push right now is how do you turn that data into actionable information? And making that transition over the next 10 years is going to be huge. And utilizing machine learning to look at defect detection and that sort of thing. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of that, And it's going to move rapidly, I think.
Right, because as I started by saying, the mechanical part was the first thing to get better at, but we've made a lot of progress, and now we're the kind of there. And in the SHM, structural health monitoring sector, of course, that's exactly what I mean. We are getting there. We've made it. We still have more to go. I know that, but eventually the data is going to be an issue.
Yeah, for sure. So that sort of brings us to the end of our We've Got Your Six, and we're going to switch over to our GAIN part of the podcast. And this is where we really talk about the business side of NDT. So Olympus announced this past December that the industrial products and life science microscope sides of the business would be divested and become Evident. Can you tell us what this means for the NDT industry and what changes we can expect to see?
Sure. So the first thing I want to say about this huge project that we are on as this new company Evident is that you should expect to see very little change, in fact, at first. That's our goal. Our goal is that you don't see much of a change, except that our company name has changed. And the reason I can say that with some confidence is because we were talking about all the different companies I've worked for, but it was really the same company this entire time. So this will be the fourth time I work on a transition like this, actually, for the same business with a new company name, in fact, and some new DNA. And so at the end of the day, we're trying to make that seamless for our customers. We're trying to make that seamless even for our employees to keep doing the same work that they're doing today and just keep going. And we're gonna change the company name and likely change the ownership at some point. But the goal is to not let that upset the good work that's happening right now at our organization. So right away, we don't expect you to notice. We actually hope, and our the tough job is to make sure that actually people don't notice much of a change at all, except the company name. But in the end, we do certainly see this as an absolute door opener for our next adventures. You have to look at every transition with what it brings, with the possibilities that it brings. And we do believe that this transition just opens new possibilities. We have plenty of opportunities and possibilities yesterday. And whenever you go through a change like this, you actually just have new ones. And what we really would like to do is we'd like to see ourselves eventually continue to diversify the solutions that we bring to the industry, to the world of NDT and beyond, because we're not just in the NDT space, actually. We're in the life sciences space. These are in microscopy and other things, as I mentioned, life science microscopes, industrial microscopes. There's a big piece of this business that's not just focused on NDT. And so we have all these possible adjacencies. And we believe that as this independent business, this new business, that we really believe that we can possibly expand and continue to look at more and more technology adjacencies than we are even doing today.
That's great. So I guess there's probably a lot of questions out there about why this move was made and sort of what it means for the future of the products in the NDT space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that I think you're right. A lot of people haven't asked me that, but I'm glad you're asking, because the reason it was made is that Olympus, our current parent and our current parent company, Olympus out of Japan, a lot of people don't realize that they are basically mostly a medical company making medical devices. We are actually a very, very small percentage of this large medical business called Olympus. And a lot of people know that Olympus also used to make cameras, and that was one of the things that gave them some of the biggest brand recognition they've ever had. But in fact, you may or may not know that Olympus actually divested the camera business last year. And now they're looking at making this change with our business, which is now going to be called Evident. And the reason is because Olympus has made the decision that it's going to focus on being a medical company. And the camera business and our business, we're not a medical company. And that's just the focus of Olympus. So what that does is that allows us to have a focus on just what we do, which is actually one of the opportunities that this change makes for us, as I was saying earlier, because it allows us to focus on just what we do. And we're not inside of a large medical company, which is very, very different, in fact, and all the problems and the market that we serve and the customers that we serve are very, very different than the core medical business of Olympus. So I think for both of us, it actually gives us that focus that we're both looking to have right now.
Yeah, I think that's great, because we see that a lot. You know, the medical side of the imaging business, or even digital radiography, that sort of thing, is treated very, very differently, even though it's a lot of the same technology. The messaging, everything is different. The focus is different. So that makes a lot of sense, actually. So I guess one question as you were talking about this and as I was reading the documents from December is, why Evident? What is the significance of this name? Can you elaborate on this?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And honestly, a name is just a name until you build the rest of the story around it, right? Yeah. Which is what our job is right now, is to explain exactly like the question you just asked, is why Evident? You know, what does it mean exactly? And until we talk about it, it probably doesn't mean a lot to people, but think about it for just a moment. Think about the products that we make. So we make the microscopes, we make remote visual inspection equipment, we make ultrasound products, we make eddy current products, we make x-ray fluorescence products. And there's some diversity there. However, there's a lot of synergy there in the fact that what we're doing is we're bringing visualization, we're bringing data, and we're making things that are invisible visible. And when you bring evidence to the table and you think about it as evidence instead of just evident, you can realize that there's tremendous synergy between all the products and services that we offer today and the fact that we're helping to bring visualization and bring evidence as the analysis and the end result of all of these different technologies. So I think it's clear when you start to think about vision and bringing understanding, because evident itself means clear vision and understanding. And isn't that what all these different products that I just described, and the end result is understanding something that you otherwise would not understand. And so it wasn't simple, by the way. We spent many months trying to come up with, suddenly we just say this company name is Evident and oh, isn't that nice? But it was I think we started with 100 names, actually. No kidding. 100 names. Then we got it down to like the final 10 or 20 or something. And there was just all kinds of arguments and debates. But the reason we ended up choosing this one was partly because of that meaning. That meaning was something that everybody could say, yep, makes perfect sense. And when you hear about it, then you say, yep, I completely understand. And now it's evident why. So we joke an awful lot about that in the office now. Is it evident? Evident. So it's been a lot of fun to finally get there, but I hope I was able to describe that well for you, but it's, yeah.
No, that's great. And I probably, because of the marketing company I have, I was probably more curious than most people, like, why did they choose that? What was it? What were they thinking? So, and maybe we can just end with, what are your goals for the new company?
Yeah, so goal number one is that we create a great business that continues to provide the services to our customers and to our employees. Both are incredibly important to us, and we need to take care of both. We need to take care of our employees, we need to take care of our customers. Both are the most important resources that we have. We are nothing without those people that support us every day, both internal and external to this business. So the goals for the new company are to never waver at our ability to serve and support our customers and our employees. But secondarily to that, of course, we want to grow this business. We want to do things differently than we did them yesterday. And that's where the opportunity comes back, which is with this focus, with this new, independent focus on doing everything that we do today, but then maybe more. It kind of gives us that new, fresh perspective on what else. And so we want to take the existing business, which is incredibly strong, incredibly durable, and we want to, see what else we can do to become a little bit bigger of a provider, a little bit more to our customers. What more can we do to help the industry get to the next level? So it's really a little bit of both.
That's excellent. It's an exciting time because you start to think, well, what is possible, right? So before we were sort of operating, and now that you have this fresh beginning, you have this opportunity to think, okay, what's possible and where can we go with this? So that's really exciting. And other than being focused, do you think that what's the biggest strength of this new company?
Yeah. So you have to start with the people. And I want everyone to know that all the people you know in this business are part of Evidence. I don't even think that there would be anybody I could say that isn't part of Evidence that you would think of today as being part of our existing business. So that, of course, is our biggest strength is this incredible team. But you have to realize that this business has been built on this legacy of core technology that we invest in every year. And when you combine the core technology with this, you know, kind of operationally excellent global footprint and the people that we have, it's really those three things. It's kind of three strengths all together. The global support, and it's just, you know, every country almost every country you could imagine, we have a presence in, and we want to be there on the ground to support the use of our products and services, and the technology itself, which we absolutely invest in heavily every year. And then, of course, the team of people that you know, and that will be here as part of the new company. So it's hard to say, it's not one thing, but it's three pillars of strength that I have to say.
That's great. That's as a structural person, I appreciate the three pillars.
I didn't even mean to do that on purpose, Mary Beth, but it makes a lot of sense. Yes. The triangle.
So I guess I have one more question then. When will we start seeing the new name?
So customers have already received a letter, so you will start to see it. Some people have started to see it already, but sort of the big reveal of the new logo and more about the new business and sort of what we look like and what we say about ourselves. Stay tuned for the first week of April.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Well, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing the new swag, everything.
Right. But yeah. The employees cannot say enough about swag. So we better deliver that very soon. So getting it officially, it's a kickoff the first week of April, which we are gearing up for and we're very excited about.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to it. So with that, I'll say thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight and your vision and your advice. And we really appreciate it. And I know our listeners are going to be very engaged with this podcast. And we just loved having you here today.
Thank you, Mary Beth. It's again my true honor to spend time with you and to be able to participate in this today. So thank you so much for hosting me. It's been great to talk to you.
Excellent. And happy Women's History Month, of course.
Same to you, of course.
And thank you all for listening today. Remember, we've got your six every month here at ndtnow.com.